Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Lovely to see you all. I expected about six people here today because of the carnival, and look, all of this lot fought your way through the crowds, refused any offer to get on a carnival float until this afternoon. Lovely to have you here. And before we get into the service, can I just check if anybody's parked today on a single yellow line? It is a problem. Normally you can park on single yellow lines on a Sunday, but okay, that's great. Enough of cars, back to people. Ours is a community of all those who walk through our doors, and so we bid you welcome today. Whoever you are, however you are, this room has space for us all. This building, this community has space for us all and has space for all of who we are. Here in this hour of quietness and music, thoughts and prayers, let's make that space for us to be who we are, to let down perhaps masks and barriers, to relax a bit and accept and allow that which is divine to flow through us. Some opening words by M.D. Boblett. Our house. May the walls of this house be strong in the face of storms, whether of wind or words, whether of thunder or of tyranny. May the windows of this house be clear to the world's light, whether of dawns or daring, sunsets or stillness. May the foundations of this house be firm upon the good earth, whether of soil or of sharing, whether of bedrock or of being. And may the doors of this house be wide to all that come from afar, whether poems or people, songs or strangers. May this house embrace, like a graceful chalice, the flame it cannot define or limit, as a heart enshrines hopes larger than the beating walls. This is Zach, my grandson, and he's come down from Sheffield to help tell the story of a kind but foolish man, and I think I'm going to take that part, so we'll change that bit. A fish with something stuck in its throat. There you go. A bird in an apple tree that has no apples, and the tired, hungry wolf. You know, great film directors have been known to say that the secret to making good films is in the casting, but it is not easy in central London to get the right cast, so we're just going to do our best with this. Okay, I think we've got this. Imagine a tree, an apple tree with no apples. Okay, right. A long, long time ago, as stories often begin, there was a kind but foolish man called Camir, who was very poor and lived on a farm with his wife and child. Now, Camir, his wife and his child worked so hard all day, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. Despite such hard work, they remained poor, as many do in this world. And at last, Camir could stand it no more. He said he would go on a journey to find his God, Allah, and he would throw himself at God's feet and pray that he would make him rich. And so he set off on his journey. And on the first day of travel, he came across the tired wolf lying in a heap by the side of the road. "Where are you going?" the wolf asked Camir, who told her of his trip to find God in order to pray that he might be rich. "Well, when you find God," said that tired wolf, "please ask him what I can do to stop feeling so tired and hungry. If I don't find the energy to start hunting soon, my cubs will starve and so will I." "Oh, I will indeed ask God about your problem," replied Camir as he set off once more along the road. And then next he met the bird. You're short of a hand, aren't you? Here, I'll have to be this one. All right, he met the bird high up in an apple tree. "Where are you going, Camir?" And Camir explained, "Oh, Camir, could you ask Allah to help me? This apple tree is my home, but it has no apples, and I'm so hungry." "Indeed," said Camir as he walked on. And then his journey brought him to the great river, and he began to swim across. The waters became rough and choppy as a fish jumped out of the water, started talking and coughing as it explained that it had got something stuck in its throat, hurting terribly. So, of course, dear Kamir offered to pray to God for an answer to the fish's sore throat. So Kamir left the river, the fish behind, walked for another day and a night, until he saw before him a great light in the sky, an enormous walled garden, the garden which he'd heard about. Yes, he had found the garden of God. And inside that garden he saw a beautiful rose bush, out of which came flames that did not burn the plant, and a voice. You know that voice, don't you? That he knew to be the voice of God. "Come here. What brings you here? For what do you pray?" And so frightened was Kamir, well, you would be, wouldn't you, at that point, that he gave the prayers of the others first. "Oh, please, great and merciful Allah, the wolf prays that she may be strong and able to hunt again. The bird wants to know why her apple tree does not bear fruit, and the fish in the river wants to know why his throat hurts so much. Oh, and dear God," said Kabir, "I would like to be rich." The voice of God spoke once more. "The fish has a precious jewel stuck in its throat. Whoever reaches in and removes the stone will cure the sore throat. The tree that the bird sits on has a treasure chest buried at its roots. Once the chest has been dug up and removed, the tree will again bear fruit. And the wolf only needs to eat a foolish man." "Oh, what about me?" asked Kamir. "How shall I be rich?" "Go home, Kamir, and all will be as it should be." And so a very happy Kamir set off home. He swam back across the river. He explained to the fish, "Oh, you only need to find somebody to reach in your throat to remove that jewel, and then your sore throat will be healed." But he was too busy to stop, and he swam on. And then as Kamir passed the apple tree, he shouted to the bird to find someone to dig up the treasure chest buried at the tree roots, and then the tree would be able to grow apples once more. And finally, he reached the wolf. This gets exciting now, this bit. Listen here. The wolf is going to leap at me any moment now. Okay. Finally, he reached the wolf, still lying more dead than alive by the side of the road. "Oh, wolf," shouted Kamir, "the great God, Allah, the All-Merciful, gave me your cure. You only need to eat a foolish man and you shall be strong again." And at that, the wolf summoned up the last of her strength, leapt on Kamir and ate him up all in one go.
You should have done that.
And then, as Allah had said, all was as it should be. And that is the story of the kind but foolish man, the fish with something stuck in its throat, the bird in the apple tree that has no apples, and the tired, no longer hungry wolf. Thank you for that. Right, we'll put those there for now.
This is just a story that I wanted to tell in relation to the idea of being open or closed. And I can pinpoint exactly the moment in the last 4 months since moving to Dubai that made me realise I needed to be open to new ways of doing things. By way of background, I was offered my dream job last year as a one-man band TV reporter covering business across the Middle East. It took some persuading to convince my better half that this was a good move. And to some extent, Susanna and I both remained to be convinced. But back to that moment, a greatly inspiring journalism teacher had convinced me some years ago that no is ever final. So here I was in, let's call him Mr. Big's office, ready to record an interview about the growth of Dubai's diamond trade from $2 million a decade ago to $40 billion today. And the body that regulates the trade had put out a press release some weeks before explaining steps it was taking to ensure that diamonds being traded in the United Arab Emirates were not funding conflict. But for some reason, they didn't want to talk about it. I, however, thought that story of massive growth was worth reporting anyway. So through something of a back door, I'd found my way into Mr. Big's domain. He was delighted to see me at first, praising the organisation I work for and the programme I work on. showing me around his impressive diamond sorting factory in a diamond-shaped tower, believe it or not, in Dubai. Then he found out that his trade's regulator was remaining tight-lipped. And whilst I'd already concluded that the business in Dubai was probably as clean, in fact, as the other big diamond hubs in Antwerp, Mumbai and Tel Aviv, I was told repeatedly that, thanks be to God, I've been well looked after here and don't want to offend anyone, before politely being shown the door. Now, oddly enough, I've been haunted by that incident on several occasions since, and I've worked in Nigeria, China, I've even worked in North Korea, and had never been ejected from someone's office before recording a pre-arranged interview. And as I said to begin with, it made me realise in the end that I might benefit from having a less Western-centric view of my new surroundings. Some of my new Emirati friends in the United Arab Emirates had confirmed that they were getting a bit sick of expats coming in and complaining about everything. One of the top complaints that you hear is that there is nothing to do during the holy month of Ramadan. Now, for the uninitiated, throughout that 9 months of the Islamic calendar, Muslims don't eat or drink anything from dawn till dusk, nor are they supposed to smoke or retire to the bedroom to while away those extra hours gained spent not eating or planning the next meal. So an idea formed in my head. That diamond chap appeared to have made friends by sprinkling thanks be to gods or alhamdulillah throughout his conversation. Now, I don't know whether he was devout or not, but it was interesting anyway. Most expat business people are happy to talk to the Western media. I mean, after all, no publicity is bad publicity, right? But several times, when not taking no for an answer, I'd noticed with Emiratis that the shutter slammed closed before I'd managed to come even close to recording an interview. Someone explained just how important face is in this culture so new to me and not losing it, and that as a journalist, once you'd lost your reputation, it might be gone forever. So I thought maybe I could recover myself a bit and do a number of other things by having a go at fasting for Ramadan. I've subsequently lost count of the number of people who said that they really respected my decision. Men and women from the region declared how nice it was to interact with someone who wanted to understand their culture rather than simply criticise it. I remember a press officer for a government body saying that it would be very, very hard during Ramadan to arrange the interview I needed on a topic. Now, asking how that person's fast was going was like finding a magic key, especially when I mentioned that I was also trying to fast this year. In fact, all sorts of doors opened, and the process was a great equaliser. A Muslim friend invited me to reportedly the best iftar, or breakfast, in town. And it was an opulent affair in a sort of gold-filled room with massive tables and an enormous buffet. But the next night, I took my iftar on the floor of the car park of our apartment block with the guys who run the mini-marts inside the apartments. The invitation was in response to one from me to two of them to share dates and fruit juice overlooking the sunset from my flat's balcony, and we both thought our best iftar was the one spent in each other's company. Now, it had been a spur-of-the-moment decision to start the fast, and I didn't think I'd make it past the first weekend, to be honest. But the enthusiasm from my new friends carried me through bar one or two wobbles all the way to Eid al-Fitr last weekend. Funnily enough, though, most of my non-Muslim friends were bemused, and one or two were even a bit hostile. And this decision I'd taken, which seemed to have opened some doors, also appeared to have closed one or two others for me. After all, we rely on meeting for lunch and drinking together in the evening as our social lubricant. I even had the sense that an invitation to drinks one evening had been withdrawn when a friend realised that I'd be able to remember everything he and his friends said the next morning. Now, who knows whether I'll choose to fast for Ramadan again next year, but I did note with interest several news reports in recent weeks about the healthiness, including mounting evidence that it can counter Alzheimer's of a day or two's fasting every week. But mostly, I'm left with a big question mark in my mind about what we could all do to be more open to intercultural experiences.
A speedy little address, this one. There's too much to say about those words, open and closed, really. But the idea came to me because it's the carnival and because, as you may have guessed, things are going to get mighty busy around here this afternoon, and today is only the children's day, and tomorrow when the main carnival arrives, and we don't even get the carnival in this street. Now, we just get the buses and the people and the litter. And the first year when I was here at Essex Church, I was completely taken aback by the number of people that arrived in this busy area. And the warden at the time, really, we haven't fully discussed it, but he decided it would be a nice idea to let everybody into the building to use our facilities. And it was shocking, really, just to see what happened. And those who couldn't be bothered to get in the building just used the garden as their private bathroom facilities, as they are known. And I ended that carnival thinking, there are times when you just have to say no, when you have to build a wall or close the door and preferably lock it. Luckily, we now have London Transport guarding the place for us. We rent the place to London Transport as a rest space for their staff. And they have a burly chap on the on the gate, and he doesn't let anybody in unless they're pregnant or very needy. Otherwise, it's just the bus drivers and the police who come in. And I am grateful for that. On the front of your order of service sheet today, I think is a lovely quotation from the Indian poet and playwright Rabindranath Tagore. I would let the winds of the world blow through the doors and windows of my house, but I will not be blown away. And there is something in that statement, isn't there? We need to be rooted. It is, of course, the mystic's path to allow the winds of the spirit and of the world to blow through us. And acknowledging the many, many times in life when we can do nothing to regulate that flow. Yes, there will be storms when all we can do is just hold on and breathe and wait for them to pass. And there will be other times when we can regulate the flow, when we can choose to withdraw for a while, maybe locking the door, or choose to step forward into life with all its wondrous, chaotic uncertainty. Lovely quote from Ellie Hansen here. That which we consider to be reality is not as solid as it sometimes appears. There is merely a veil between us and a great unknown, a marvellous mystery at the heart of all that exists. Those who are prepared to take the mystic path step over a threshold into an unknown region and begin a journey to the heart of all existence. But there are no maps or guidebooks to follow, no certainties upon this path, merely glimpses provided perhaps by artists, dancers, fellow travellers, life's mystics, those who have explored the intimate secrets of the natural world. Follow the light, the sparkle, the enthusiasm. Follow the path of your heart. Step over a threshold. Words from Ellie Hansen. And of course, this is also a theological issue of doors and windows. For every theological house has its doorway. There are places of entry and departure. And any exploring of our beliefs about the nature of the divine at some point brings us to ask about our relationship with the other, the one who is different from us. How do we deal with people who have different faiths than us, as Jonathan was exploring? How do we live in other lands? How do we welcome the other into our city, into our world? As Unitarians, we make much of our emphasis on hospitality, on welcoming everyone, and on asserting people's equality, whoever we are. We were the first congregations in this country to offer blessings for same-sex partnerships, the first to have a woman minister, the first to explore interfaith dialogue, as it's sometimes called. I hope we are open to the other. I think we're increasingly, in our congregations, open to the realm of the spirit, allowing ourselves to explore more deeply that non-rational element of life, and to share more fully with one another what it means to be people of spirit. I think we it's important that we invite people to work together in small groups to actually explore who we are and what has meaning for us in life. What is the path of heart for each and every one of us? And of course, David Darling's message last week on the importance of self-reflection through the writing perhaps of journals or spending time through movement or art or time spent alone in contemplation. These are all valuable ways for us to be more open and to explore our own boundaries and what they mean for us. These are all worthy endeavours when choosing to take a spiritual path. When I was musing on these images of doors and windows during this week, exploring this theme of open or closed, I remembered the joy of being a child and watching children playing with doors, which of course we're generally told not to do, aren't we? But have you ever played in a revolving door and choosing to stay in there and just go round and round and round and not bothering to enter that public building? Or pressing the doors open and closed on lifts? Or those automatic doors in banks that just seem to magically know when you get close to them and open? I wonder if we could at times be as playful with our own boundaries in life. But let's not be foolish like poor Camille in our story, who failed to spot that the threshold to the riches he so yearned for was right there waiting for him. The wisdom to find that threshold is surely worth being open for. Amen. And so may the doors of your house be open and its rooms be filled with tenderness. May love be the key. May joy shine from its windows. May infinite peace protect it and sacredness dwell within. Go well and blessed be. Amen.